Hello and welcome to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CFBU 103.7 FM in St. Catharines. I'm your host, Daniel Angrenon. On today's show, we have grassroots activist, community organizer, founder of the Vegan Police, one of the main organizers of Conflict Gypsy Archive, and friend of the show, Dylan Powell. Dylan is one of the founding members of the Niagara Animal Defense League, which encompasses a variety of working groups, including the Live Free Collective, Combat Animal Testing, and many more, including Marineland Animal Defense. Now, last year, we had Dylan on the show to chat about Marineland Animal Defense and SLAPP lawsuits. But now Dylan is in the midst of one after a year of successful campaigning against the Animal Captivity Park. Dylan's hard work has really brought anti-oppression to the forefront in Niagara, and I'm really glad to have him back on for a chat. Welcome back, Dylan Powell.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
No problem. Now, we've been talking about Marineland animal cruelty and neglect for a few years now, and of course, I mean, it's already inherently cruel for holding animals captive, but for any new listeners, can you perhaps give a quick rundown of what's happening to these animals, especially maybe some of the more recent developments?
Okay, so in August of this year, an avalanche really started with ex-employees coming forward, basically detailing testimony for things which we had known for a long time, but which as animal advocates, no one would really take as being unbiased material. So since then, now 15 ex-employees have come forward and they've detailed horrific and systemic abuse and neglect, everything from baby bear cubs being eaten alive by other bears, by other male bears, because there was no separation in those cages, even though John Holler was made aware of this. And when I say John Holler, that's the park president, founder, and owner. He privately owns the park, so that's where we put our focus. To systemic water issues, which caused blindness in some of the sea lions. Their sea lions are all now retired from performing. And bleeding Kiska, their lone orca whale. In the United States, it's actually illegal to keep orcas alone like Kiska is currently in Canada, but their lone orca whale Kiska has a bleeding tail. And she was refusing treatment for a while. It looks like hopefully that's gotten under control, but it's it becomes this issue where if it was one of these things, it would be really shocking. But it gets to a point where it's like, you know, 300 different incidents where like people can bring up, and it just becomes kind of overwhelming. The fact that John Holler, park owner, actually drives around the park and will shoot deer from his truck. He won't get out. Shoot deer from his truck because they have no vet care for the deer actually on site. We knew that for the longest time, and finally that was out on public record. It was just horrific stuff. From people looking for more information, especially about the testimony, the Toronto Star is the paper that led this kind of investigative report, and if you go to www.thestar.com/Marineland, you can read all those stories.
And actually, one other recent thing was they're excavating the mass graves. Have they done that yet? That's coming up. Would you be able to talk more about these mass graves and what we might expect soon to hear?
Yeah, this was developed in December. Actually, the 24 hours before the suit was filed against me, the mass grave story went to the public. And basically, advocates have been trying to make this an issue and a priority for decades. We actually have signs that are like gravestones that have all of the animals' names on it. And those signs have been around forever. So it was kind of funny when this came out. People were like, mass graves discovered at Marineland. And everyone's like, we've known about it forever. Because no one wanted to do anything. So basically we had different levels of government kind of passing the buck and saying that, you know, and this has been constant throughout this whole issue. You'll have different government bodies who basically try to make it an issue of process. So they'll say, well, you know, we were aware, but these people didn't go through the right process. And they'll just pass it off between them. Eventually, the Toronto Star contacted the Ministry of the Environment and said, you know, look, we're doing a story on the mass graves at Marineland. We have reason to believe that they bury animals on site. This comes from advocates. It comes from testimony of people who've worked there and actually buried animals there. And we're wondering if you'd like to comment on that process. And they said, we didn't know Marineland buries animals at on site. So for 50 years now, they've been burying animals on site there, right next to basically a stream that leads out to the Niagara River. The Ministry of the Environment initiated an investigation. Within a 24-hour span, they were very tight-lipped on what that investigation was looked like, but they threw out the possibility of opening up some of the pits. There's four pits that have been established. The one main pit houses over 1,000 animals. So it looked like they were going to potentially open these up. The next day, we heard back that the pits were not going to be opened up. but that they took two soil samples, one from lower down and one from higher up, and that those would be, the results from those tests would be delivered in mid-January. So basically that's the timeline we're waiting on now. Again, something that's kind of a constant with Marineland and governing bodies is that initially you'll hear a lot of tough talk, and then that starts to fade down and down and down and down and down. The OSPCA launched an investigation in August after employees came forward, and we're still waiting on results from that.
Well, and that actually reminds me, you were saying a minute ago about how the deer didn't have vet care, right? Mm-hmm. But didn't it come up that a lot of the animals are exempt from cruelty things because there's a vet on staff? Would you be able to tell our listeners about, you know, the controversy with the vet care there?
So the OSPCA Act, there's a ruling within it, and basically just a little sentence in the legislation that states if an animal is under vet care, then they can be struck from the Act. They're no longer under jurisdiction for the Act. Now, this is something that the OSPCA, even within house, disagrees upon, because you have Community Safety Minister Madeleine Meilleux, who oversees the OSPCA, stating that no, you know, the vet should not be out of the jurisdiction, or the animals that are out, that are in her vet care, should not be outside of the jurisdiction of the OSPCA Act, whereas the OSPCA says that they are. So it's kind of at a stalemate right now. For the animals at Marineland that do have the vet care, those were, especially initially, that was a testimony that was really driving the OSPCA investigation. And that's sea lions dealing with eye issues, irritation and blindness because of water treatment, as well as the other marine mammals that were dealing with really bad issues with basically water. Basically, they've passed the buck to the College of Veterinarians of Ontario. And it now becomes an issue of whether or not Marineland's veterinary staff are following the rules and regulations of their practice and of their profession. And then it becomes another layer. Mm-hmm. It's just a game of hot potato. Anyone who's doing any kind of social justice work or going against these institutions can basically just bank on this happening. No one is going to be the one who wants to be accountable or who wants to make large decisions. It will be a very slow, drawn-out process, and at every level you will have people try to demobilize you and basically pass this issue off to someone else.
On that note, maybe turning to something a little more positive, this past year, because of the expose, it's been very successful in terms of mobilizing protesters, actually, and bringing new numbers to the campaign. Can you comment on some of the highlights of the past year in terms of organizing against Marineland?
Mm-hmm. I want to start. This is something... when the press came, they tried to make it seem as if previous to this, you know, no one really cared, or it was just kind of a core group of a handful of people. We started off the year with a demonstration of almost 100 people, and we actually marched down to Clifton Hill and got into a bunch of trouble there with Niagara Parks because you're not supposed to demonstrate down there. But we've had a lot of powerful demonstrations throughout the last couple of years, and everything that came in August was just kind of icing on the cake for people who have been around this issue for a long time. We did a demonstration immediately after the first reveal of information, and that was about 500 people. Followed that up with about 300, and then did a home demonstration at John Holler's house that brought out around 100 people. And then finished the year on October 7th with a demonstration that brought out close to 800 people. So those demonstrations are some of the largest animal advocacy demonstrations in Canadian history, and some of the largest in North America in quite some time. So It was something really exciting to be a part of, and I think it's really led to hopefully a resurgence of the grassroots in Canada, Ontario, and North America, yeah.
Definitely, and at that very last one, the protesters actually stormed the gates and went into Marineland and shut down the dolphin show. Would you be able to talk about, you know, what was going through your mind at that at that point?
So people, over the course of the last couple of demonstrations, people had kind of pushed up further and further. And at this demonstration, people kept moving forward and forward and forward, and there didn't seem to be much pushback. I had seen a crowd kind of develop in that area for most of the day, and I figured people were just standing up close to the ticket booths. And I was going along with setting up the PA, and we were actually getting ready for a sing-along for the song Call of the Wild that was set up for our performers that day. And we were testing the mic, and we're testing the sound, and someone runs over me and like, "Dylan, people are in the park! Dylan, people are in the park!" And I looked at the girl Megan, who was going to be singing that song, and I said, "You know, can you just hold up here for a second? I got to go inside and see like what's actually going on."
Of course.
Because what we have for our system for demonstrations is we basically have marshals that are organizers, and those people are supposed to be doing police liaison work as well. So my main concern right off the bat was we need to get in there before, you know, nothing gets broken, no one gets hurt, no one is arrested, anything like that. So I headed in, and there were already people inside. People were chanting, but other than that, people were really respectful of people's space. No one was screaming at kids or anything like this, and there was no kind of property destruction. It was all just kind of bent on getting inside the park and making a statement. And at one point, I wasn't there for it. At one point, I guess John Holler drove up, got out of his car, and then ran back into his car. And that kind of instigated some people as well. So people entered. More Niagara Regional Police officers showed up after the dolphin show was shut down. And they walked through the park and said, you know, this is the trespass request being made, which for people who know the Trespass to Property Act, the request has to be made by either an occupant or a representative. So they made that request. And at that time, basically they split the group into two. So people who were at the front of kind of the auditorium were moved back and around out. And then other people were led through the auditorium out and around the auditorium. So at that point I headed back around. Was stopped by the one sergeant who was on site, and basically was like, you know, we need to kind of get people out of the park. And I said, you know, we'll work towards that goal. I'll do whatever I can. It's kind of hard at this point to really take on any role for a couple hundred people who are just a kind of a large mass. But we headed back out, and I was waiting for those people to come around. And it was, at the time, it was kind of, I was nervous because you couldn't hear anybody and you couldn't see anybody. And in those situations, you never really know how the police are going to react. They could have kettled those people all together in a crowd and then made an example of them. But it was really, I don't know, it was kind of like breathtaking, because after like 2 minutes of kind of panic like that, you start to hear people chanting as they walk around. Yeah, and there was like a smaller march of probably like 50 people. And they marched orderly, same way, just made a statement and marched out of the park. And everyone left kind of as a group. And as we walked out, Spandy Andy was doing Gangnam Style in the parking lot. So for people who want to get a good snapshot of that, I still am finding more photos and more videos of the day that I haven't even seen yet. So there's tons of photo and video to document that, if people are looking for an understanding of what that looked like.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So moving on to the big issue at hand right now, a strategic lawsuit against public participation, or SLAP suit, involves the attempt to squash political action against person or group. So can you talk about the charges pressed against you / Marineland Animal Defense and what this SLAP suit is hoping to achieve?
Yeah, so just to be clear, there's no criminal charges. In relation to my organizing at Marineland, there's been no criminal charges against me. We have a graphic up. It's like over 30 demonstrations, thousands of demonstrators, one trespass ticket, which was one girl, Chantel Godin, who was issued a trespass ticket at that demonstration. But that's it. In the history of all those demonstrations, one trespass ticket, and they're suing for $1.5 million in damages, and they're looking for a multiple location injunction. So basically what they're alleging is that I mastermind a campaign of what they call intimidation and harassment, and they've attempted to associate really anything which they see as in that kind of gaze as relating back to me. So, and these are things which, if people are aware of the ATA case in the United States, it's pretty similar for corporations to do this, and even for the government sometimes to take up this language. So sidewalk chalk. Sidewalk chalk, which they know I have not written, really has nothing to do with me, but sidewalk chalk, which they're taking as vandalism, washable sidewalk chalk. And then statements like June Murgle has blood on her hands. So that's from the Niagara Falls Animal Medical Clinic. We did a vigil. We walked, did a candlelit vigil in November, a 9K candlelit vigil. We walked from her office at the Niagara Falls Animal Medical Center to Marineland, basically to just make this attachment. And they claimed that that was a form of intimidation and harassment. The statement of claim that's been sent is about 18 pages, and not a lot of it relates really to anything specifically to do with me, other than the fact that I was inside the park on October 7th, which I've always stated I was. I never said I wasn't, but I've also always stated my role. I didn't encourage anyone to enter that park. I didn't coordinate, organize, or send anyone in or throw up a flag or a wink or a gang sign or send out a bird call. That was something that happened, and I entered the park because I felt I had a responsibility to liaise with police and make sure that everyone got out of there safely, and that you know, the statement was made, but it was made in a way that was respectful and didn't escalate to something that, you know, would have been a problem. So, and there's documented evidence of that as well, of me liaising with the police inside the park. So that's generally what they're kind of hinging on. The multiple location injunction is basically they want an injunction to keep myself and quote unquote the activist 500 meters away from Marineland, the house of John Holler, the Niagara Falls Animal Medical Center, the residence of June Mergel, and then any other employee or ex-employee. Now, even the injunction and the language, it makes it seem as if we demonstrate frequently against the homes of a lot of people. We've only ever held 3 home demonstrations, and all of them have been at John Holler's house. He is the president, founder, owner of Marineland. As if you're looking at the structure of that park, he is a person who is responsible for all of those things which happened there. And that's why we take that extra step. He also evicted 47 people from their homes in a trailer park that he bought up. So we feel justified in organizing with those people to make him accountable to his community. That seems to be their main goal, though, is the injunction, the damages suit for what they include in their statement of claim, and then also just kind of the outlandish number, you know, $1.5 million. They might as well sue for $15 million at that point, right? Like, there's nothing that they can really relate to show kind of damages like that or to illustrate that, you know, I do mastermind some kind of campaign of intimidation and harassment. We actually feel the exact opposite. I have video from 2011 where John Holler at a demonstration threatened to cut my head off and then also run me over, and he repeated that twice. That information was made public. The Niagara Regional Police has that information, and they never did anything about it. If I was to utter similar threats to John Holler or park employees or ex-employees or anything like that, you can bet there would be criminal charges. So in our minds, you know, we've done over 30 demonstrations. There's been literally thousands of people have come to this issue, and there's been one trespass ticket. And there's been another thing I should mention. There's been constant police presence, constant. I'm not talking about one cop car driving by. I'm talking like 5 to 6 cop cars staked out in a perimeter, gathering information and watching demonstrations from beginning to end. If we were doing things illegal, there would be criminal charges, and there you would see a lot more of a clampdown. In this case, though, that's what a slap suit is. They're just taking things, they're throwing everything they can against the wall, they're hoping something sticks, and they're trying to paint a horrible picture and smear, you know, one person, hoping to silence that person, but then also message to other organizers, look, if you continue to be a face for this or you're vocal, you can expect us to do this against you as well.
It's kind of funny you mentioned the when he threatened to run you over, because I was there for that, and I remember that very clearly. So even if there's video, I can also say that I corroborate your story. Like we were saying, you know, they have all these charges against you and whatnot, but clearly, you know, John Holler has been intimidating people. There's also all this cruelty going on. Like, is there any plan to countersue or to, you know, fight back legally in that regard?
Yeah, it's definitely an option that legally we feel like we have in our back pocket. This clearly shows an abusive process, and it's a consistent abusive process on their part. They're intentionally using the legal system in a way to intimidate and harass. Unfortunately, as Dalton McGuinty stepped down, not only did legislation at Marineland die, but legislation against slap suits, which there was a bill tabled exactly in October of last year. That would have offered more protection, that died as well. So the industry, as far as the legal industry goes, and even you know, civil rights groups are all on board that slap legislation needs to happen, but there's still also legal precedent as far as taking a stand against abusive process on the part of larger corporations or kind of larger entities, wealthier entities against community members like this. So it's always an option, and it seems with this issue too, it's the only way in which Marineland is ever going to be neutralized from stopping this, right? To successfully countersue and make it something that actually you know, hurts them in their pocketbook coming back, because when they filed their previous slap suit against Niagara Action for Animals. That wasn't a step that was taken, so I think they feel justified.
Mm-hmm. So what are the predicted results of this? So, you know, say you win or say Marineland wins, what's going to happen with this suit?
It's really hard to say. There's so many different layers to this. This could be saber-rattling, or it could be something that they very seriously want to put time and effort into. I don't really try to lose a lot of sleep thinking about what the outcome can be that I can't really control, or what Marineland's motives or intentions are. It's just we're trying to take the opportunity to use this space to really broaden our network. We're establishing a speaking tour right now. It's called the Stop of the Commercials Tour. For people who've lived under the tyranny of those commercials for a long time, we got stops right now planned in Buffalo, Kitchener-Waterloo, Dunville, Ontario, St. Catharines, and we're working on stops as far away as the West Coast, and then also down into D.C. in the States. So we're trying to take it and illustrate to Marineland that this attempt will only strengthen Marineland Animal Defense, because, you know, if we don't get the option to counter-sue, or that's not something we pursue, we can still illustrate to them that slap suits like this, or slap threats that continue on like this, are only going to strengthen opposition to that park. It's not, you know, if they want to take a step to try and lessen the opposition that they're facing, they really need to face up to their animal program, their captive animal program there, and start to ask really hard questions about, can we sustain this, and what is our way of transitioning out of this?
Mm-hmm. And I think the perfect representation of that is, I noticed on the Facebook for your speaking tour, there's a picture of these fish, and it says organize, and it's a bunch mm-hmm. of small fish teaming up against a big fish, and it just seems so apt, because, you know, he's trying to go for one person, but I mean, Marineland Animal Defense is many, many people, right? Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a small break for a station ID. So stay tuned, and we'll be back with more from Dylan Powell of Marineland Animal Defense. Welcome back. Today we're speaking with Dylan Powell of Marineland Animal Defense. Before the break, we were talking about what was going on in Marineland and the slap suit that he's facing. And we were just starting to talk about his speaking tour, Make the Commercials Stop. Would you be able to talk about what audience can expect of this tour?
So basically, at each stop, I'm going to give kind of a presentation that's kind of an overview of Marineland Animal Defense and the campaign, and try and key on some of the, you know, the funnier stories, and make it kind of a lighter approach of getting across issues of captive animal parks. Some of the stops are going to have music performers, so basically friends who've just reached out and going to come and play. Mike XVX is going to be playing in St. Catharines here. Eric Smith's going to be playing in Dunville. We'll try to build more of that. And then also some other stops that we're going to show documentaries, things like The Cove, things that people are kind of more aware of with those issues. But we're trying to make it kind of lighthearted education 101, because, again, we want to use this network to bring new people in and get the message out, but also have it be, you know, it's at the end of the day, it is a pretty serious suit. Their allegations are very serious. So we got to treat it as such as well, yeah.
Now, I know you don't have anything in front of you or whatever, but do you have any of those dates offhand?
So St. Catharines is January 19th, Dunville is January 25th, Buffalo is January 31st, and Kitchener-Waterloo is February 7th. And then there's also stops planned in Durham, Port Dover, London, Ontario, and then you're looking at West Coast dates, and then as far down as D.C. Those dates aren't set yet, so keep checking back to the Marineland Animal Defense Facebook page, and you'll see that information.
That's awesome. So what is the plan for the upcoming season at Marineland? You guys had a protest on New Year's Day, actually. Would you be able to talk about that and sort of what might be coming up once the park opens again?
Yeah, we had just a symbolic kind of launch demonstration on New Year's Day. About 60 to 70 people came out. It was really nice. It was the first winter demonstration at Marineland that I've ever heard of. And we had some fun. It was nice. Probably half the crowd were new faces, which was really cool, because it showed that we kind of captured people's imagination with that previous demonstration. The campaign that we're calling this year is Operation Shut It Down. Basically, if you see the videos or you were there when people were entering the park, it's something we really try to key on. They weren't chanting reform now. They weren't chanting legislation now. They were chanting shut it down. And we feel like that's not only our focus, but that's the actual focus of people around this issue broadly. So Operation Shut It Down launched on January 1st. We have some more demonstrations coming planned up near the end of March before the season opens. And then we have our opening day demonstration on May 18th, which Rick O'Berry is going to be coming back. And for people who are at that October 7th demonstration, you know, aside from This is not me counseling people to enter the park or do anything illegal, because that's not the case, and people will be getting a full rundown of their legal rights and responsibilities of the demonstration, but you can expect a larger demonstration there as well. Rick's going to be coming in. We're going to basically be organizing for the same kind of numbers that we had previously. And the tone of that event, we're looking for 1,000 people, and for every person to bring one origami. If people know this story, 1,000 origamis, you fold 1,000 origamis, you'll be granted a wish. We have a young little activist, Vijay, who's been featured in a lot of our demonstration videos, who he's done this himself as a wish to try and free the animals from marine land. He folds up 1,000 origamis. So in honor to him, and also kind of acknowledging the fact that it's going to be the next generation that really kind of takes this issue and runs with it, that's what we're doing for that demonstration. It's a origami demo. So make sure you come out and bring your origamis. Another thing that I can release now, because I think by the time this airs, we'll also have this up. We're going to be looking at a global marine land awareness week, and that's going to be coming in March. So basically, we're going to be calling out for events all across the world. Same thing, film screenings, speaking events, documentaries, outreach, demonstrations, whatever you can do, basically where you're at, to try and spread awareness around this issue. Because for anyone who's ever demonstrated at marine land, you know fundamentally it's a tourist town. And a lot of the local people know all these issues, and they've known them for a very long time, and they're not sympathetic to the park. But it's really hard to reach people throughout the world and let them know what's happening at Marineland. So that's just some things we're looking at right now.
That's fantastic. It seems it's, you know, the momentum's really exploding. So let's change topics a bit. Can we talk about some other facets of the Niagara Animal Defense League? There's been a lot of big campaigns coming up. Would you be able to talk about any recent or upcoming campaigns that, if any local listeners are listening right now, that they can check out?
So Niagara Animal Defense League basically works on a spoke model. So even just picture in your mind a bicycle wheel. At the hub, you basically have the Niagara ADL, and then all the spokes running out are the working groups. So all the working groups basically share resources between each other through the hub of the ADL. Things coming up, combat animal testing is a working group of the Niagara ADL. This is the first dedicated anti-vivisection campaign in Niagara ever. Their launch starts actually this week, so that's pretty exciting. Vivisection on campus at Brock University is something which is amping up, and something which they're putting a lot of money and investment into, as well as their business programs. So as you're seeing more corporate control of that university and the introduction of more vivisection, that's something that we feel needs a response from the community. People need to be educated about what those dollars and projects are actually funding and what the actual outcomes are from those projects outside of the shiny PR, which is Brock University and their administration. So that's coming up. Some other big things, Friends of Gonestado, which people on this show probably wouldn't be too familiar with, but we do have a Haudenosaunee solidarity group here in Niagara with the ADL. Haudenosaunee just means people of the longhouse, so you're thinking of people who are at Six Nations, so the reserve that's now cornered around Caledonia and Brantford. Gonestado is the protected place. It's a land reclamation site formerly known as Douglas Creek Estates. So basically we do support work and solidarity work with land defenders at Gonestado, and then also with a bunch of folks at Six. We've got a big event coming to St. Catharines on February 2nd. We're going to be marching a giant two-row, which the two-row is the two-row wampum belt. 2013 is the 400th anniversary of that treaty being signed. I know people are going to listen to this and be like, I know none of this stuff, but Google it.
Yeah, no, definitely check it out.
So the two-row wampum, it's the 400th anniversary, and we're going to be trying to make a statement right now. Idle No More protests, obviously. Most people in Canada have heard about this. Treaty rights are being stomped on, and actually there's plans to try and terminate treaty rights. So this is a direct response, and we've always tried to make the ADL a place where we can organize in solidarity with other movements and with other people to try and protect the earth and to try and also, you know, protect wilderness, because this is fundamentally something which is a part of that strategy. So we're going to march the two-row wampum through St. Catharines February 2nd as kind of a fundamentally reestablishing this relationship, a nation-to-nation relationship, recognizing sovereignty and autonomy, and also peace, respect, and friendship, which is what it was based upon.
That's fantastic. I can't wait to go to that. So how can people support you on your speaking tour with the Legal Fund, with Marineland Animal Defense, Niagara Animal Defense League, any of those various things?
Mm-hmm. if people can come out, basically all the events are going to be arranged in a similar fashion with the door. It's suggested $10 to $20 donation, but no one's going to be turned away. So if you can't make that donation, don't worry. Come out, support. If there's a talk in your town, promote it. If there isn't a talk in your town, reach out. Let's organize one. You know, if you're too far away still, try and key in on that Marineland Awareness Week wherever you're at, and really push that. Make sure that, you know, people globally are aware of this issue. For people who want to donate directly to the legal fund, email money transfer or PayPal directly to marinelandanimaldefense@gmail.com. That's the defense fund specifically for my suit, for the suit that's against me, targeting me as a Marineland Animal Defense organizer, and which is looking for an injunction against Marineland Animal Defense as well as myself.
Would I be able to interrupt you for a sec?
Yep.
Would you be able to talk about the other lawsuit that's going on, why these are separate, and sort of how people can help in that regard?
Yeah, so there's two suits filed by Marineland. The other suit is against Christine Santos. Christine was the last of the basically 15 whistleblowing ex-employees. She came out in October. Christine was a trainer with Kiska, and it's because of basically her video footage and her testimony that we know that Kiska was rubbing against her tank and had a bleeding tail, and that she was actually rejecting medical care for this. Marineland has filed a $1.25 million damages suit against Christine Santos, basically stating that they feel that she's giving inaccurate information, or that she's not competent to give the information that she gave, even though she's a trainer at Marineland. So that seems weird that they would be stating that someone who works there is wouldn't be competent, right? But that's the basis of that suit. For people looking to give directly to Christine's fund, there's an Indiegogo, which is just basically a fundraising platform that exists. It's called Legal Fees Mounting. So if you just Google search Christine Santos, Legal Fees Mounting, you'll be able to see that. I can't remember the Indiegogo link off the top of my head because it's a bunch of numbers, but that's what you want to look for. The reason why the campaigns are separate, fundamentally, what Marineland's legal strategy has been is try to draw this link as if the whistleblowers are the exact same as Marineland Animal Defense, or that we influence them, or that we have some kind of tie. They want to do this because they feel if they can lump everyone together, then they can neutralize everyone at once. We've always been mindful of this. We knew this would be their legal strategy. And just from the get-go, strategically, this wasn't how things happened. Even across the board of the whistleblowers, you'll see variance, and then perspectives between Marineland Animal Defense and whistleblowers, you'll see a lot of variance. We've always tried to encourage support and solidarity for whistleblowers, fundamentally recognizing that their testimony is really the things which are driving a lot of the opinions and things that we were saying for a very long time, to a point where they're being accepted in public forums, right? So it is important, but at the same time, it's also really important that we keep that buffer, and that we make sure that, you know, we can legally protect each other separately, because that's the best way, legal strategy, and this isn't just coming from me, this is also legal counsel, but that's the best way basically to uphold testimony and to protect everyone. There's a case which, if people are interested, you can look up, and this has happened previously too with investigations or whistleblower testimony against corporations, Ringling Brothers versus the ASPCA. The ASPCA just settled for, I think, $8 million with Ringling Brothers because of a case which the ASPCA had brought forward, which the Ringling Brothers then spun as the worker, the whistleblower, how it was paid testimony. So basically, you have to be mindful when you're running these campaigns that if you present that, the other side will pick up on it. And it doesn't matter if it's funds for legal fees or anything. They'll pick up on that and insinuate that you had influence on what those ex-workers said, right? That they are embellishing testimony, or that they are making up testimony because of your influence. And we're trying to be extremely mindful of that. And we know that it creates a lot of scenarios too. Right now, there's people who are creating this dynamic where it's like, whoa, support one legal fund or don't support the other. You know, why aren't you doing more? And then it becomes painful, because I've done legal support campaigns now for about 3-4 years. And it just gets at a point where it's like, you know what? We wish we could do more. But at the end of the day, the thing that's going to help Marineland's animals, the animals at Marineland the most, is upholding that testimony and making sure that that testimony stays rock solid. and that people recognize the fact that, you know, the concerns of the whistleblowers are not always going to be the exact same concerns of marine land animal defense, but that the more of a united front that we can kind of keep publicly and that we can support each other, even though we're both separate, it's that's the stance that marine land is really afraid of.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really important that, you know, you watch out for those pitfalls of the legal system, because, you know, it's really unfortunate. But, I mean, I think it's important to make sure that, you know, both the whistleblower's testimony and your own, you know, both have the ground they need. Mm-hmm. I was actually curious. I meant to ask this before. We talked about how the Toronto Star expose, you know, led to this, you know, great surge of momentum from people who had never heard about the marine land issues. Could you talk about the general role of media in the marine land campaigns? I know there's been this press against marine land, but there's also been some other issues. Mm-hmm. Would you be able to comment on those?
So it's just fundamentally the way that, you know, capitalism works, or, you know, the relationship of money, right? People need to understand that their news outlets are directly tied to being ad clients. That's what actually funds media sources, is their advertising dollars that they get. So marine land has some very specific news outlets locally and also in Western New York, which they, you know, they put a lot of money into, Sun Media being one of them. We've tried to get out front of a lot of these sources to make people aware of this relationship and how that relates back to the coverage of the issue. If you want to talk about the relationship of Sun Media and marine land and how it relates to this issue, these stories, this testimony would have never been released by Sun Media paper. Sun Media, after this issue was released, instead of continuing to investigate stories locally on the ground, which some of the national papers and the Toronto papers wouldn't be able to do, they instead turned their focus to providing space for, you know, people at marine land who were going to issue, or local politicians and business entities and counselors and all these people who are going to offer up, you know, expert testimony on how they think marine land's so great and they've never seen abuse at marine land when they've been there with their children, right? There's also been a lot of really weird shading as far as journalism goes. Some of the things which are in my statement of claim relate back to claims made by Sun Media journalists who weren't actually present. So that relates back to the October 7th demonstration. A Sun Media columnist, John Law, wrote an op-ed basically about tactics and went on in it to make this link and insinuate this link that I orchestrated people entering the park, which then becomes marine land's legal position, which becomes very odd. It's like, how are people not understanding their relationship, or at least not keeping somewhat of a buffer? You have a financial relationship on one end that seems to be shading legal positions, which becomes very problematic. The Toronto Star comes into this issue because not a large traditional ad client of marine land. They're also a national paper with a bit more of a focus, and they have the ability basically in the forum to combat against a lot of the legal kind of intimidation, harassment that marine land will attempt against papers, you know, sending endless cease and desists. I've got, I think, 5 or 6 cease and desists on my wall now from marine land, and I know a lot of other people have a lot too, so... It basically was kind of a perfect storm as far as finding a source that was outside of the region, that wasn't influenced by local business or local politicians, that wasn't a marine land ad client, that was large enough to be able to counter any kind of legal positioning by marine land. So for people who demonstrated there for a very long time, all of this came out of their hard work. And I think a lot of people can be really happy with this, because this really is something that kind of only happens, you know, very infrequently. It's very, very hard to have something all kind of come together like this and all converge. But I think that also was a reflection of just how bad the park is, right?
Absolutely. So where can people go to find out more about these campaigns and whatnot?
MarinelandAnimalDefense.com is our central website. We also have a Twitter account, and we've got Facebook, so... Look for us on social media. People want to find out more too, you can go to thestar.com/marineland, read all that testimony. Other than that, other good industry resources, Save Japan Dolphins. Should plug that, because Rick O'Berry's always been a big supporter of marine land animal defense, so people should head there as well. Earth Island Institute, yeah.
Awesome. We are getting close to out of time, but do you have any final thoughts you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, so... As always, pretty much every time that I've been on the show, I always try to urge people, just get involved, get active. This campaign, Marineland Animal Defense, started with just a few people. You know, none of us were professionals. None of us knew professional fundraising. None of us knew how to do professional press. No one had really organized demonstrations outside of like a couple hundred people. So this is something that can be done. This is a model that can be kind of duplicated anywhere. And we really need to reestablish that grassroots network and also have a coordinated network against all of these marine captive animal parks and all these animal use parks, because they're tied in, they're organized. The Canadian Association of Zoos and Aquariums, that's an organized body of the captive animal industry. And in my opinion, we need campaigns against every single one of those parks, and it needs to be on the model, the same with the ADL. We need to all share resources and all help each other out. And I think that, you know, the faster we kind of realize that goal and people realize that they fundamentally have power themselves, instead of giving it up to celebrities or politicians, you know, that they can affect change, I think you'll see a lot of change happen very fast in this country if we can get to that point.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Dylan. It was really fantastically put, and I wish you best of luck on the campaigns. I'll be seeing you there, of course. Animal Voices is brought to you from CFBU 103.7 FM in St. Catharines and CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. You can always check us out on animalvoices.ca or email us at animalvoices@gmail.com if you have any questions, comments, or show ideas. Thank you very much to our team, Aaron O'Sullivan, Neil Harvey, Taylor Book, Kevin Tillman, and Lauren Corman. Until next time, I'm Daniel Angrenon, and I hope you have a great week.